Welcome to the Derek Loudermilk Show. This is episode 388 with Mark Anthony. Mark Anthony JD, the psychic explorer, is a fourth generation psychic medium who communicates with spirits. He is an Oxford-educated attorney, licensed to practice law in Florida, Washington, D.C., and before the United States Supreme Court. This psychic explorer travels to mystical locations in remote corners of the world to examine ancient mysteries and supernatural phenomena. Mark appears nationwide on TV and radio, including CBS's The Doctors, Gaia TV's Beyond Belief. He co-hosts his own live stream show, The Psychic and the Doc, on Transformation Network. He's a featured speaker at conferences, expos, and universities, including Brown, Columbia, Harvard, Yale. He's the author of three best-selling books. The latest, The Afterlife Frequency, is the gold winner of the Cover Visionary Awards, was up for a Pulitzer, and ranked as one of the top books about faith in God. And right now, he's up for a couple OMI Awards. He'll talk about that in the episode. But if you like this episode, make sure you go and vote for Mark so he can win one of those awards. This is going to be a very wide-ranging episode from techniques that Mark used to enhance his mediumship skills and the Hogwarts-like school that he went to. You'll get a sample of actual mediumship. Someone came through during this interview for messages for me, so that's pretty cool. And, of course, we'll get into lots of the science for how all of this stuff works. So without further ado, please welcome Mark Anthony. Mark Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Derek. I've been looking forward to your show. I've followed your career with interest, and I consider it an honor to be here. Thank you.
That's so cool to hear. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I want to understand whether you think mediumship or psychic abilities has a genetic component, because you're a fourth generation medium, as I see on your website. What do you think about that?
Well, certainly in the case for my family, Derek, this is a genetic trait, and it's what is known as a recessive trait. A recessive trait is one that skips a generation or two. For example, in my family, most people have brown hair and brown eyes, but every couple generations, someone with blue eyes pops up. So that's a recessive trait. Left-handedness is a recessive trait. And the thing is, when both parents have the same recessive trait, the likelihood of one of their children having that trait increases. And my dad was a medium, and so was my mom. But the thing is, we weren't the Ouija board, turban, neon light in the window. My dad was a U.S. Navy SEAL and an aerospace engineer, and my mom was a commercial artist. And their backgrounds and families could not possibly have been more different. My dad got out of the Navy, and here he was like 22, and he said he was at this USO dance. And it was so funny when my dad was telling me, he goes, "I saw this foxy looking dame," and he's talking about my mom. and my dad's family, they were very white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. They were Baptists from Pennsylvania, and my mom's family, they were Italian, and my mother's father was from Italy. But what it was, my mom was only 19, but she worked at a high-end department store, and she got all the designer clothes at wholesale. So she was decked out, you know, and he thought she was like 30. And he said when they met, there was just something there. And it was more than just, "Hey, I think you're hot." Because, you know, in those days, you know, my mom, you know, she was a good Italian girl, good Italian Catholic girl, had to be chaperoned and all that. But after a couple dates, she said to my dad, his name was Earl. She goes, "Earl, before we go any further, there's something you need to know about me." She said, "I see spirits." And then my dad replied with a slew of colorful metaphors that only a sailor could, followed by, me too. And then they realized that this connection was much deeper. And so my dad had four siblings, three sisters and a brother. And one of his sisters, Marjorie, had this ability, as did his mother, Isabel, and his maternal grandmother, Grace. And my mother had this ability, as did her maternal grandmother, Giovanna. And if you indulge me just for a minute, Giovanna was very, very well known in the Little Italy and North New Jersey Italian community as the woman who knows things. Mm-hmm. And in fact, she was revered and treated with great respect by the Catholic Church. And a couple years ago, I think it was in 2016, Derek, PBS did a special called The Italian Americans. It was a four hours special, 2 hours a night. And they actually did an entire segment on Giovanna. And they actually referenced her psychic abilities during this special. And wow. So it was really cool. I remember watching it, and then on the commercials, you know, my cousins and I, you know, were all calling and texting. Did you see that? And so I've been able to track it back four generations. I would assume that it goes further, but, you know, it was hard enough finding and tracking to all the people who have these abilities. So to answer your question directly, yes, in my case, this is genetic.
And that, you know, having some siblings have the gift and some not, that really, you know, is a great illustration of that. I've been operating under the assumption that it's an innate human quality, something that we can all train to some degree, but some people are much more natural, like in same with music or athletics or stuff like that.
Exactly. For example, I mean, and I love the way you said music or athletics. I mean, we can all take piano or guitar lessons. We can all take tennis or swimming lessons. But how many of us are going to end up at Carnegie Hall as a concert pianist? And how many are going to end up at Wimbledon? You know, so everybody has these abilities to varying degrees. It's just simply some people are better at it than others. And, you know, think about it. Wouldn't it be boring if everybody was the same? We'd be like a school of fish, you know, the same size and reacting to everything the same way, but we're not. People are very diverse. Certainly, I believe that we're all brothers and sisters of one big human family, and we have our, you know, physical characteristics and cultural differences and things. But be that as it may, we're a very, very diverse species. And I think that that makes us more interesting.
Have you done anything, or especially early on, to train this ability or improve your accuracy or anything like that?
Well, having my parents certainly was a big boost. My mom and I used to talk about it a lot. Dad was, don't talk about this, outside of the family. And if you'll indulge me just for a minute, when I was about 5 years old, when I was 5 years old, I was getting ready to start school. And my mother's family, you know, even though my dad was Baptist, you know, I was raised Catholic. And I was going to Catholic school. And I remember my father sitting me down and saying, Mark, do not talk to this about this to anybody other than your mother and me. Because people who don't understand this and people who see things others don't get taken away. That really scared me. And I know now that Dad wasn't trying to scare me, but what had happened to his sister Marjorie, who was a medium, and I write about Marjorie in my book, Evidence of Eternity, and in my latest book, The Afterlife Frequency. She's an amazing person. I never met her, not in this world. And this happened about 20 years before I was born. Marjorie was married to this guy who worked at a machine shop at a steel plant in Pennsylvania. The problem is he was a religious zealot. And I'm going to go so far as to call him a fanatic. And he did not like her abilities, you know, because a lot of religious people think they're somehow, you know, evil and negative. And one day he was getting ready to go to work, and Marjorie begged him not to. She said, please don't go to work. Something terrible is going to happen. They got into a big argument. She started crying. He goes, fine, fine. You and that voodoo stuff, I'll stay home. Well, what happened, Derek, is that day a crane was lifting thousands of pounds of steel beams, and then the cable snapped, and it crushed the machine shop that he worked in and killed everybody in it.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, logically, he would have been there. Now, you would think he would have been grateful. Instead, this increased his paranoia about her, and he colluded with what I consider to be an unscrupulous and unethical psychiatrist who issued a diagnosis without examining Marjorie that she was a paranoid schizophrenic. And literally, two guys in white jackets came, and they forcibly removed Marjorie from her home, took her to a mental institution, and she was subjected to electroshock therapy against her will for over 6 months. It did so much damage to her brain, she never again talked about spirits and foreseeing the future. And my mother, I mean, my mom, you know, found out about this. She wanted nothing to do with that brother-in-law ever again. My dad was furious. And so that's why my parents were very protective of me as a child. And they said, you can tell us anything, but other people won't understand this. And so, you know, that was 20 years or so before I was born. And then you asked, did I do something to develop it? Well, certainly, you know, my mother and I used to meditate, and I learned about these things. And I went to, after my mother passed, and that's a whole nother story. I did go to England to the Arthur Findlay College for the Advancement of Psychic Science. And it's kind of like Hogwarts for psychics.
Cool.
And it is funny because I remember I started training with some mediums in Florida. And one of them, he was the guy in charge. He said, you know, and I'm very humbled that he said this. He said, Mark, I can't teach you. I go, why? What's wrong? He goes, I've never seen anything like you. He said, you got to go to England. All right. So he recommended this place. And so I get there. And it was funny because, you know, you get off the train from London into this town called Stansted. And it's in southern England, beautiful little town. And so I hailed down a taxi, and the cabbie goes, so where are you going, mate? And I said, Arthur Findlay College. He looks at me, he goes, oh, spook school. I go, spook school. So he's driving me in the cab. And all of a sudden I see the sign that says Redwood Forest. And I'm like, what? And see, Arthur Findlay, he was like from the late Victorian, early 20th century era. He was a British aristocrat. And he actually brought redwood tree saplings over to England, and they've grown. So there's this small forest of redwood trees.
Whoa, amazing.
Yeah. And so we get there, and it looks like, you know, you stepped into Downton Abbey or something like that. And I'm like, oh man, this is so cool. And so I go in, and they say, you must now leave your luggage here. We're going to sort you into your groups. And I'm like, wait a second. Didn't I see this in Harry Potter? So they bring us into the great room, and the head instructor, she comes out. They call them tutors. Very prominent English woman. She had the cute little glasses, and she stands up. It's not a stage, it's a rostrum. And she stands up on the rostrum, and she looks at all of us, and she says, welcome to Hogwarts. And everybody starts laughing. She goes, all right, then, spook school. but it was a great experience. And they showed me how, when a spirit comes in, how to remove blocks to it, how to be open to the contact, how to not jump to judgments, to understand things. And that kind of helped me along in my journey. But I found, for me, the best way is just to keep doing it. I've also developed my own terminology and technique. And the terminology that I use for spirit communication, I introduced in my last book, Evidence of Eternity, and my most recent book, The Afterlife Frequency, because the problem with mediumship, well, I don't say the problem, an issue with mediumship is too much of the terminology is stuck in the Victorian era. And it's time to bring it into the 21st century, because we also have the benefit of 21st century science and quantum physics to help explain this in a way that it hasn't been previously.
Yeah, that's fantastic that you brought that up. But I just want to slow down for a second, because I'm still feeling it's been a kind of an emotional roller coaster. And you talking about your relative, your aunt, was pretty intense. And I, you know, I understand that people have, you know, like witches and people have been persecuted for a long time, but I guess I had never really felt it the same way. Like it could happen to someone that I know. And that's pretty intense.
It is. And the thing about that, Derek, is until maybe 25, 30 years ago, you didn't go around saying, "I see spirits." Certainly, there have always been pockets and enclaves in the U.S. and in Europe for mediums and psychic abilities. But to this day, in several Islamic countries in the Middle East, they put people like me to death. A couple years ago, Saudi Arabia, they beheaded something like 130 some odd people, and a third of those were charged with the crime of sorcery, which would include psychic and mediumistic behavior. So even in the 21st century, we're persecuted. People have said, "Oh, it's schizophrenia, you're crazy, you're a charlatan, you're making it up." And I can assure you the legitimate mediums are not. But we have suffered throughout the centuries. You know, like you said, like in the witch trials. I mean, look at, if you were in medieval Europe and you said you saw spirits like Joan of Arc did, you end up being burned alive like she was. But then there were more clever psychics who joined the clergy. And because they're receiving visions of the Holy Spirit, we refer to them as saints. And in one of the lectures that I give, I talk about psychic saints and how people like St. Francis of Assisi, St. Anthony of Padua, St. Clare of Assisi, Bernadette of Lourdes, St. Nicholas, ho, 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 people like this exhibited what we would now call psychic and mediumistic ability. So if you're in the clergy, you got around it. But if you weren't, not so good.
It reminds me of a little bit of how I talked to my grandfather, who's lives in Tennessee, very conservative, religious. And if I would say something like, you know, "I'm practicing psychic contact," he would not think that's the right thing to do. But so I've just changed the language. I say, you know, "I got a great message from Archangel the other day, and he wanted me to pass it on to you. So here it is." And he's like, "Oh, okay, great. You know, thanks." Makes total sense, right? So it's like, it was a great hack, obviously, for saints to put themselves in that category versus, you know, just staying as a layperson.
Well, certainly. And it depends where you look in scripture too. For example, in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 4 through 12, there's a list of gifts that we have from God, two of which are prophecy and another discernment of spirits. Hmm. Well, that's what a medium does, is the medium discerns spirits. And it says in there that not only are these are gifts from God, but they come from one and the same spirit, meaning God. In Romans 12, verses 6 through 8, it also states that we all have gifts from God, and if your gift is one of prophecy, then you should have prophesied in accordance with your faith. And even in the really brutal book of Deuteronomy, a lot of people think that Deuteronomy says that mediums are not a god, which it does, but that would be in Deuteronomy 18, but you got to keep reading further down until you get to Deuteronomy, I think it's 23, where it says that basically, if what the prophet, and that's what psychics are called in the Bible and the Old Testament. If what the prophet brings forth is not true, then it is not from God. But if it is true, then it is. So in other words, Deuteronomy, which is the, you know, mediums are not a god, the flip side of it says, but if what the prophet says is true and comes to pass, then it is of the Lord. So people have to be very careful about what I call salad bar Christianity, where they go up and start picking and choosing and yanking which phrase out of context that they wish to use to justify their own agenda. When you read that entire chapter of Deuteronomy, it gives truth as the standard to determine what is transmitted from God, from spirits, as the determiner of what is authentic and what is not. So these are some of the things that I talk about in the lectures that I give, because a lot of people are afraid of spirit communication. I mean, certainly in my own family, you can see what had happened there. But now we live in an era where people are beginning to be more open-minded about it, to a large extent.
Yeah, and you know, I was up until 8 years ago, a materialist scientist, and I just kind of dismissed all that as being like really fun. Like, I love Harry Potter and Magic the Gathering and all that stuff, and I was like, oh, that's really cool imagination stuff. But once I started digging into the science after a couple of personal experiences, then I realized there's tremendous amounts of fantastic research that backs all this up. And I think you've been part of some of that, right? You've been tested in laboratories.
I have. I've been tested in the UK, at the University of Arizona, and then in LA. I've had my brain subjected to positronic emission tomography. Man, that was a tough one. There's all these electrodes on my, I look like an electronic Medusa, you know, and they're measuring brain wave fluctuations, and then EEGs, and then CAT scans. And then just a couple of weeks ago in January of 2023, I was part of a research study at the Laboratory for the Advancement of Consciousness and Health at the University of Arizona. And Dr. Gary Schwartz, who's one of the world's foremost scientists for afterlife research and survival of consciousness, was the head of that program. And so I've worked with him and continue to do so. It's an ongoing project. And I'm not at liberty to give a lot of details, but I can say this. What he's working on is known as the soul phone. And the soul phone is technology which communicates with spirits. And from what I understand, they're going to be announcing a major breakthrough in the not too distant future. So it is more than conceivable, Derek, that within the next few years, there's going to be a device that we tune into the other side. You know, and so when we were sitting in the laboratory, you know, I was working with some other mediums, and Gary Schwartz handpicked what he considered to be, you know, the top mediums. And I'm very, very honored to have been among that group. We were making jokes like, live from the other side, it's Albert Einstein, you know, and things like that. So I think that we live in an exciting era, mm-hmm. where we're on the threshold of science proving the existence of the afterlife.
When I was in church as a kid, there was a phone in the stained glass window. It was like an old-timey stained glass scene, but then there's this like red phone there, like the kind on the president's desk to Moscow. And I was always like, what is this phone? And they're like, oh, that's your direct line straight to God. And I was like, huh. It was an incongruous thing, but that's so cool that they've got a cell phone.
It was Thomas Edison, in one of the last things he was working on. I'm sure you've heard of this because you're a science guy. He called it the spirit phone. And he said in an interview in the 1923 Scientific American that he believed that he could create a device sensitive enough to detect the presence of and communicate with discarnate intelligence, meaning a spirit. And the sad part is that he died before he was able to complete work on it. But now, a century later, Dr. Schwartz is developing this. And the advantage that Dr. Schwartz has is a century of quantum mechanics and electronics development. I mean, you got to think that, you know, Edison, you know, he was dealing with, I mean, you know, the guy invented the light bulb. I mean, he was dealing with, by our standards, antiquated technology, whereas now, you know, we've got laser technology, quantum mechanics, and we got all sorts of things that Edison didn't have and probably would have needed to develop his spirit phone.
I know you have this concept called the electromagnetic soul, and I actually have maybe a few things that I want to see if they fit within your model, but maybe you could first sort of describe this model or this theory, and then I could share from a couple previous interviews I've done things, questions that I had come up.
Certainly. Over the years, I've been, I have a background in science physiology. It's from being an attorney and in practicing law. The cool thing about practicing law, did you ever see that movie, The Devil's Advocate, with Keanu Reeves and Al Pacino?
No.
Al Pacino's the senior partner of a law firm, and he hires Keanu Reeves, and then Keanu Reeves figures out that he's really Satan, you know? Which, you know, it doesn't do a lot for the image of lawyers that, you know, the law firm Devil's Advocate. And at one point, Keanu Reeves goes, why the law? And Al Pacino says, because it puts us in everything, you know? And if you look at it, every facet of our life is somehow regulated. There's some type of government regulation, which is not always a bad thing, because if you get on an airplane that doesn't crash, that's because of government regulation. If you drink water or eat food that's safe to drink, that's because of government regulations. And the thing is, as an attorney, I had to deal with so many different disciplines, forensics, physiology, medicine, accident reconstruction. And so I really enjoyed learning about all these different disciplines. And I specialized in head injury litigation. So after I left the practice of law and I started studying mediumship, it all began to come together for me. And I've always studied theology, philosophy, ancient mysteries. You know, like you, I've enjoyed traveling around the world and going to, you know, hot spots that are paranormal or spiritual and understanding them and finding out as much as I could, or at least, you know, confronting the mystery. And so every great spiritual teacher from ancient India through Zoroaster, Moses, Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, Confucius, Lao Tzu, I mean, Native American spirituality, has, they've all taught that the soul, the who and what we are, pre-exists the body, comes into the body, and moves on after the body dies. We know from the field of neuroscience that the brain has an extremely, in fact, the most complex electrical field in the body. The brain accounts for something like 3% of the body's weight, yet uses over 20% of the body's electromagnetic energy. And so it, we know from physics that energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transferred from one form to another. So studying all that, and then we know that everything is made of molecules, which in turn are made of atoms, which in turn are made of electrons, protons, and neutrons, which in turn are made from the smallest particle, which is a quantum electromagnetic energy. And since you're a science guy, make sure I say this, an electron is technically a quantum because it's 1/1800th the size of a proton. All right. So I wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything there. So that means everything, Derek, you, me, this computer mouse, the radio waves, the show is being broadcast on, the rings of Saturn, at the same basic subatomic level are electromagnetic energy. So everything is energetically interconnected. And so by combining all of that, I came up with the term the electromagnetic soul to define and describe what we really are, which is pure electromagnetic energy that is an eternal soul.
Okay. Here's what I think. And let me see if maybe you agree with some of this. What I think you're describing, so electromagnetism exists only in space-time, right? It's bound by the speed of light.
Correct.
So Stefan Schwartz, who's the remote viewing researcher, he basically did these experiments and he went through and excluded all electromagnetic, the whole spectrum from, they were doing telepathy and remote viewing with submarines. So he basically said, it can't be electromagnetic. It has to be some other type of energy. And he basically just has called it, it's just information. So my understanding is that information or consciousness is fundamental. It sort of precedes the electromagnetic spectrum. So this, I think that the soul exists fundamentally in the information field and then is sort of projected physically as an electromagnetic entity in sort of 3D space-time.
Yeah, actually, Dr. Gary Schwartz disagrees with that. In fact, he adopted my term, the electromagnetic soul, because he said, like 15 years ago, he came up with the electromagnetic dynamical mind-body interface. And when he saw my term, electromagnetic soul, he goes, well, that's much more concise. Let's use that, the EMS. Because you can say information. Well, information isn't just nothing. It's something. And it's got to be stored and conveyed and transmitted using some form of energy. And so that's why a number of scientists have adopted the EMS, the electromagnetic soul theory. Also, tying into Einstein's theory of relativity, which on the subatomic level indicates that time doesn't exist, which is why spirits can often bring up future events, because on that EM level. Then think about God or the divine power, whatever you want to call it. Always was, always will be. Everything's interconnected energetically. Once again, energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transferred from one form to another. So that may be his opinion, and maybe he's right, but I still am sticking to my guns on my EMS theory, because it also tends to explain the other forms of spirit communication, which only include mediumship, but also near-death experiences, shared death experiences, deathbed visions, out-of-body experiences. And, these are some of the things that I discuss in my book, The Afterlife Frequency.
Okay, I definitely want to get into how it explains mediumship. You may also be familiar with Eileen McCusick's work, where she talks about the human biofield, and she uses these tuning forks to basically tune the field and sort of bring it back into coherence. And I'm waving my hands around because she talks about it as a toroidal field, which extends, sort of 12 feet out from the body. So yeah. I feel like that corroborates the fact that there's an electromagnetic component to our human form for sure.
Certainly. Well, it's all vibration. I mean, everything has, if this pen, hold on. On the subatomic level, this pen is comprised of the same EM energy that you and I are, but it's vibrating, its vibrational frequency is at a much different level than us. And so with the electromagnetic soul, so my theory is, think your brain like a drop of water. I mean, your brain is like a computer hard drive, and it didn't create the programs that are on it. It merely hosts them. And your electromagnetic soul is like a drop of water. And so when the hard drive crashes, that drop of water, your EMS plunges into this eternal sea of consciousness, which I've termed the collective consciousness. Other people have used the term collective consciousness. And so now EMS, electromagnetic soul, is now linked to other souls, linked to other souls, linked to other souls, which is why during spirit communication, a spirit can come through and present information that far exceeded the scope of anything that person knew, while they were living in our world, because they have access to, it's kind of like a cosmic internet, I guess would be sort of a way of thinking about it. And so with spirit communication, think of our world as AM radio. It has vibration, it has frequency, it's energetic. The other side as FM radio. And so when it comes to spirit communication, I have to increase my brainwave frequency. Spirits have to decrease their vibrational frequency, and we get a frequency match. And it's in the zone between their FM radio, the afterlife frequency, other side, and ours. And this is not so far-fetched as one might think. We now know that there's five different brainwave frequencies: gamma, beta, alpha, theta, and delta. Gamma is when you're really cooking. It's like, you know, you're on the final Jeopardy championships and you're just cranking out, you know, that. Beta is the state we're in right now. This is the, I can get up and, you know, use a computer, drive my car, tie my shoes. That's the awake activities of daily living. Then when we begin to relax, we go into alpha. I like to joke and call that the groovy baby state. You know, that's where you start to relax and unwind. But then when you go from alpha to theta, and theta is deep sleep and sleep where you dream, and then there's delta. And delta has been poo-pooed until recently because not much is going on with your brainwaves. Why? Because your body's diverting energy to healing, to cellular repair, to your immune system. So delta is important. It's just that there's not a lot going on, you know, mentally. But back to the alpha-theta border is where psychic and mediumistic activity occurs, which is why when psychics and mediums, when we do readings, we're kind of in that daydreamy state, because that's when we're receptive to spirits. Also, so normally it takes hours to get to that that level, the alpha-theta border in deep sleep. And that, Derek, is why dreams are the most popular forms of contact for spirits. You're smiling because you probably have had a dream where a deceased loved one has come and communicated with you. And it's because they can spot that. So the EMS of a spirit adjusts his or her frequency down to that alpha theta frequency. And that's where spirit communication occurs. Now, what we don't understand just yet is why people like me can go from beta to alpha theta within seconds. So there, maybe there's something different about the structure of my brain. And I have a theory for that as well. But that is why dreams, and you know, it's fascinating when you look throughout history, dreams have always been much more accepted in the Bible. I mean, think about the three magi that they go see Herod, and Herod's like, well, find out where this Jesus baby is. And they go and they find the infant Jesus and Mary. And in a dream, they're warned, hey, Herod's a nut job, you know, don't go back to him. And simultaneously, Joseph, the stepfather of Jesus, receives a message from a spirit, from an angel to, hey, let's get Mary and Jesus to Egypt and out of Herod's reach. And that's just two examples. So the Bible's loaded with examples where dreams are the instrument of prophetic and spiritual contact. So that's part of how the EMS works, is that spirits are able to adjust their frequency to align with our brainwave frequency.
What's the importance of the emotional state in dialing in with spirit communication?
That's really good. You know, Derek, I don't know if anyone's ever asked me that. And I've been interviewed hundreds of times. Who knows, man? Your emotional state is very important. And this is also why I recommend in my books and on my website for people not to engage in spirit communication right after the passing of a loved one. I recommend 4 to 6 months. And people say, well, the spirit, do they need an orientation? No, the spirits are capable of communicating right away. I've been there when people have died, and then I'm communicating with their spirit within minutes. It's the recipient. It's the loved one who is so devastated, so heartbroken emotionally. And because they're in such a profound state of grief and pain, what happens is they create a block, an emotional block. And think of a reading, think of it in the terms of a triangle. Okay, at the top of the triangle, that's the other side, the afterlife frequency. That's the collective consciousness, all the electromagnetic souls. At the base of the pyramid of the triangle, on one end is the medium who's communicating with the other side, the other end with the client, the recipient of the message. So in a perfect scenario, you have a three-way flow. The spirits are communicating to me. It is the client that they're here to see. I transmit information to the client. They interpret it. They validate it. So everything's fine. But what happens all too often is the client will be engaging in what I call the no syndrome. Something comes through. No. They start shooting it down right away, or they're overanalyzing it, or they're in such a profound emotional state that it creates a block. And so for successful spirit communication, it is best to wait until your emotions stabilize. It doesn't mean you're all happy. It just means that, you know, you're not hysterical and you're not so terribly upset that you're not going to be able to listen, to validate, and you're not flooding the energetic field with that block. Does that answer your question?
A little bit, but you're talking about the state of the third party, but I'm curious about the state of the medium.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah. The state of the medium, I mean, it really helps if, you know, you just didn't get served with a warrant to be in court or something. I'm making a joke there, but yeah, it is important for the medium to be focused, to be clear. You know, I don't want to be upset. I don't want to, you know, have gotten in an argument with anyone in my family or something like that. So it's very important for the medium to be focused, to be clear, to try to remove the stress. That's why meditation is so important. Also, you know, some mediums may differ with this, but I'm very meticulous in my health habits, what I eat, when I eat. I don't drink alcohol. I don't engage in recreational drugs. I want to keep my brain pure, clear, and functioning at, you know, optimum ability. I know a lot of mediums, you know, they drink heavily and they eat all types of sweets and things. And, if, you know, that's certainly their choice, but that's not what works for me.
And the reason I'm asking is because I've started learning about David Hawkins' work, the scale of consciousness. And basically there's a certain frequency, which he's mapped and measured these different frequencies. You know, there's the neutral frequency, which is like 250 megahertz or whatever it might be. And so I was thinking like someone would need to be at neutral or higher in order to be high enough for a non-corporeal entity to talk to them.
Oh, sure. One of the hardest spirit communication sessions I ever had, it was 2 weeks after my dad passed. And, you know, I was already booked, you know, it was a fairly large venue. There was, you know, well over, you know, a couple hundred people there. And I remember my manager, Rocky, she's like, oh, you'll be fine. And later on, I heard she was like, God, I hope you can do this. You know, because I got up there and I was still, you know, I was grieving my dad. And all of a sudden, I always open with a prayer. And I don't try to push my belief systems on anyone, but I like to open all my sessions with the prayer of St. Francis. And when I do that, it just makes me feel at ease and calm. And then all of a sudden I opened up and I got into that zone and I did my job. I did my work and the readings that came through were very beneficial to the people there. And then after the session, you know, and I reverted back to just being me, you know, then the grief started coming back.
Speaking of grief, that's a big part of your work. Is that right?
Certainly. I mean, people come to me for all sorts of reasons, but my job is to facilitate contact between people in our world and their loved ones in spirit. And spirit communication, Derek, can be a very important therapeutic step in the journey through grief. I do a lot of work with the organization Helping Parents Heal. What a beautiful organization. And the Helping Parents Heal, they refer to parents who've lost children as shining light parents, because the light of their child's love shines within them and from eternity. And I just think that, that's really, really beautiful. And they also use or incorporate, rather, mediumship, spirit contact, as part of the healing journey through grief. Because a lot of organizations don't. I mean, I've been to grief shares at churches and things. And it's like, that's the work of the devil. And say, like, all right, yeah. You know, I don't govern myself by Bronze and Iron Age standards. All right. It's like, look, if you can communicate with somebody that meant the entire world to you, and they can present to you validating information as to their identity and what's been going on in your life, and give you helpful suggestions and guidance, I think that is worth all the Prozac in the world. And the thing is, spirit communication, it is not, you know, we've talked about Harry Potter. It is not the Harry Potter magic wand that I wave and you're all better. It's an important therapeutic step in the journey through grief. And I believe that grief resolution needs to be a cross-disciplinary approach. Counseling is very important. And, you know, I don't mean to crash on medications. Sometimes they are important for a while. You don't want to get to the point where you can't face your life without pills, you know, unless, of course, there's a medical reason why. But counseling is important, engaging in creative and therapeutic activities. And then when you're ready, spirit communication. So it's, there are all these different disciplines that are weaved together to help somebody through this lifelong process known as grief. Grief is not something that anyone gets over. It is a process that we go through.
I'm curious about if you've come to understand, because that's such an intense situation. I have young kids myself. But my understanding is that people sign up for life paths. They sort of have these major events in their life that they've agreed to experience. What is the benefit to the parents of having a child die, or like, what is the role in their life that I don't know, can make sense?
That is one of the most profound and difficult dilemmas to try to understand, because no parent wants to hear that, well, this is something that you had to go through. Like you said, you're a father. And just from the little that I know of you, you're a loving father. You would throw yourself in front of a train to save your kids. I can see that in your eyes. Okay. And that's what a dad should do. That's exactly what a dad, what a mom should do. But it appears that we come into this material world existence and we go through experiences that we can't have when we're in purely energetic form. Spirits and electromagnetic souls are pure energy. Energy doesn't get sick. It doesn't get old. It doesn't get tired. It doesn't die. All the spirits I communicate with, they're all just all buzzing around at the speed of light, and they're all on this incredible wavelength. But they do understand what we're going through, and that doesn't make them unsympathetic. It makes them extremely empathetic and sympathetic to what we're enduring here. I don't have all the answers. No human does. I have some insights. There is nothing that we can do about the death of a loved one. But what we can do is govern how we react to it. So, for example, Helping Parents Heal. It was founded by two women, Irene Volvatis and Elizabeth Boisson. Both of them lost children. Now, what did they do? They founded an organization to help other people coping with the loss of children. They incorporated spirituality, mediumship, They could have started drinking heavily. They could have engaged in rage and anger. And you know, parents have every right. Anyone who lost a loved one is angry, and you have a right to your feelings. But as a criminal defense attorney and a former prosecutor and now as a medium, I developed what I call the grief, crime, grief cycle. What I've seen in my work as an attorney is that somebody, let's say a child or a young adult, there's a death and it's not dealt with properly. Now, they don't have a dad like you that's going to sit them down and talk to them. They don't have a faith community or a good support system. Don't think about it. Don't worry about it. All right. They're from a very unsupportive. So the grief is never dealt with. And you can't snort away grief. You can't smoke it away, drink it away, have sex enough to make you feel better. The grief is there. And then the grief will lead someone to commit behaviors, impulsive or addictive, which create a crime, which inflicts grief upon somebody else. Take a drunk driver. Okay, some people that get behind the wheel of a car after they've had, you know, six or seven drinks, they didn't wake up that day and say, I think I'll get drunk and kill somebody. This is a pattern of behavior, but why are they drinking? Why are they have addiction problems? And what I started finding in my work as an attorney and then as a medium is that 99 times out of 100 in that person's background, there was an unsolved, unresolved death. And so certainly, you know, you want to get them into AA and all this, but I would always try to get my clients into grief counseling too, because their grief led to crime, which inflicted grief upon somebody else. And so this is part of what I teach and part of what my books are to help people with. The grief, crime, grief cycle is terrible. I have seen it so many times. What I'm seeing so much of now, and it really, really breaks my heart, is so many young people dying from fentanyl. Mm-hmm. Fentanyl is got to be the most toxic substance. It's 50 times more powerful than heroin. And so some kids will be at a party and somebody puts it in a cigarette. Oh, it's fine. We're just using this little tiny bit. But they don't realize that that little teeny tiny bit is 50 times more powerful than if that had been heroin. And it throws them into cardiopulmonary failure. It just breaks my heart at so many readings that I've done in the past couple years where, and I can tell when a spirit comes through and that person died from fentanyl because I feel how people died. I can feel when I go into cardiopulmonary failure or when the person did, that was most likely fentanyl.
Wow. Yeah, I live in St. Louis and, there's definitely, it's a problem here in certain parts of the city. And, do you have if you could, what's the leverage point for this cycle for breaking the grief, crime, grief cycle?
Well, first, when I was an attorney, they would end up in my office. Now they come to me for a reading. And I remember there was this one young guy, he had to be about 19 or 20, and he was sitting in front of me and I was looking at his rap sheet and it was only for the last 18 months. Before that, there was nothing. And then I'm seeing possession of marijuana, possession, like oxycodones, drunk driving, two drunk driving charges. And I'm sitting there looking at this. And then all of a sudden, I started feeling a presence around him. And I looked behind his shoulder and there's a female presence. And he's looking at me. He's looking over his shoulder and he goes, "You see things other people don't." And it's like he caught me because I didn't mean to be doing this. And I go, "What do you mean?" I go, "Your mother died, didn't she?" And he burst into tears. And he said, "Yeah, she could have died about a year and a half ago." Bingo. And he said, "I was all she had. She was a single mother. We were so close. And I think she died from cancer." And he said he was just so lost. And so I talked to him about that, and I said, well, if your mother were here, what she would want you to do is to get into counseling for your drinking, but also to get into counseling for grief. And then I don't recall what it was, but I said something, and he looked at me and he goes, that's exactly what she would have said. He goes, you can see her, can't you? And I said, well, yeah, I can. And he was very, very grateful. And I said, why'd you come to me? He goes, I don't know. He said, I was looking for lawyers and something just drew me here. And it's like, how about your mom? You know, because spirits will do things like that. They're not here to control us, but they can help guide us, provided we're listening.
Hmm. You're...
Hold on, Derek. Is there a female energy connected to you that could be on the parent level, like an aunt or somebody? There's a female connected with you who is in spirit. And what I'm getting with her is I feel this blockage in my sinuses. I'm feeling it in my throat, in my lungs. And I'm also getting a lot of pains in my stomach and GI tract. So she could have been either on your generational level, possibly one higher. I mean, not your level, your the parent, aunt, uncle level, or the one above that. Could be a grandparent, or could be on the mother level. And I'm getting, and when I say I'm getting, she was experiencing a lot of issues in her stomach and GI tract, but also very labored breathing. All right, here we go. Now I feel like my lungs are filling up with fluid. Difficulty breathing. This could be congestive heart failure. And in addition to all of her other issues, and I'm also getting the sensation in my hands. So she could have been having some arthritic problems or grip strength issues. Does any of this make sense to you?
The only person I can think of would be my mom's mom, my grandmother. My other two grandparents are still around.
Okay. And she's handing me an emerald, which is the birthstone for the month of May. It doesn't necessarily mean it's connected to her. May could mean the following things: a birth, death, anniversary, or event connected to you or her or someone close to either of you or any of you within the month of May. Could be a piece of jewelry of significance with an emerald in it. But May is dedicated to Mary, the mother of Jesus. And once again, I'm not pushing religion, but this could be a variation on the name Mary. Could be like Mary, Marilyn, Margaret, Marianne, connected to you or her or someone close to either of you.
Yeah, this my grandmother was Betty, I would love to have either of my grandparents. So my mom's both of my mom's parents are passed away, and I would love to have relationship with them.
Let's go back to, is someone Catholic?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Let's go back to the Mary. Is there somebody that could be in this world connected to them, or you with a variation on the name Mary?
Not that I know of anybody who's not alive.
No. That could be somebody in this world too of significance.
Okay, my ex-wife is named Mary.
And there we go. Okay. There we go. All right. So I know when I'm getting good stuff, it's just I don't, you know, that doesn't always come with a crawl like on CNN.
Okay.
She's telling me that Mary wasn't a bad person. It's just that that relationship ran its course. She said it was like a car that ran out of gas. There was no reason for either of you to stay in that car. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, and that was my experience.
Yeah. So she said that Mary's not bad. Is she? Well, of course, she's in your corner. You're the good guy. And she also told me that you're doing very well, like with that breakup. Like you're not in the place that you used to be. The resentment has gone away. You have discovered that there's no longer any reason for you to be angry. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, we all have residual stuff with exes, but she's saying that you've gotten pretty far. Now, she just put in front of me or projecting to me an amethyst. Amethyst is cool because it's a beautiful purple color. Amethyst is the birthstone for the month of February. So what this could mean, Derek, is a significant birth, death, anniversary, or event connected to you or someone very close to you in this world or the other side within the month of February, unless there's a significance with the color purple to you in some way, like you love it or you hate it.
Both of those things are true. I love purple, and my wife's birthday is in February this month.
Oh, so the new wife. Okay.
My current wife. Yes.
I'm to call new wife. Our current. All right. She wants to talk about her now. Wow. These two women could not be more different, night and day. And she said that this one is your companion. This one is the one that is by your side. And this one gets your sense of humor. That's what she said. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Interesting. Funny how they used, they meaning the collective, has used the analogy to a car. But now there's a gentleman coming in with her. Is your mom's dad in spirit?
Yes.
Okay. All right, because there's a guy with her, and he's holding up spark plugs. Now, this could indicate some type of electrical issue with your car. It may mean either that you just had a tune-up or work done on your car, or you need to in the near future.
Okay.
Does that make any sense to you in any way?
I think car is about due for its like 20,000-mile checkup.
Yeah, he's holding up a spark plug.
Okay.
And with him, I mean, dun, 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 dun. Was he military?
He was. He was also a patent attorney, and really smart guy.
Right, right. But did he have military background? Because there's somebody there with them, and I'm hearing the Navy, the Navy song. Who's in the Navy?
My uncle, who's still alive, was in the Navy. His son.
Is that their son?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're talking about your uncle. Interesting. When they focus on him, they're talking about some blockages in his heart. So I don't know if you're aware if he's had a history with cardiovascular issues, but I'm getting blockages in the left ventricle and then on the right side of the heart as well. So let's, if your uncle's open to this, let's get him into the doctor. Let's have them take a look at this. Now, this is what I call spirit intervention. And that's where spirits will intervene by giving somebody the heads up on a condition. Well, if they focus on this guy and I'm getting this pushing tightness in my chest. And so he may not be aware of this, but he definitely needs to get this looked at right away. Okay.
Okay. Good to know.
You have three kids?
I have one on the way, two and one on the way.
You have three kids. Okay, so they're talking about. Is one of the children having any issues with vision or eyesight?
Chloe, my daughter, often rubs her eye.
Let's get her in for an eye exam. I'm getting like one of her eyes is just like a little bit off. And when I say I'm getting your grandparents' spirits, what that may mean is she may have a slight stigmatism in one of her eyes. Also, they talk about her with frequency. I'm hearing like, wee. Does she like sound or music? I know like kids like sound, but they're talking about her and tonal qualities. Does that make any sense?
Not exactly. She is just a really high frequency person. She just like radiates light and love, just like a beacon.
Okay. Normally when I do a reading, I give a 15-minute pre-explanation. And part of that is your interpretation is more important than mine. So I'm getting like, wee, you know, I'm getting frequency. And you said she's a high energy, high frequency person. So we'll go with that. Okay. And it's interesting because I know kids are afraid of the dark, but I'm getting the sense that she isn't.
She's not afraid of anything.
Yeah, she's not afraid of the dark. They said to her, she's like, eh, lights off, no big deal. And who's the gardener? Who likes gardening? Here's why. your grandmother's opened her hand, there's a whole bunch of ladybugs on it. Ladybugs are my indicator for someone who likes to garden. And that could have been your grandparents, or it could have been you, or someone close to you. But there's getting this whole ladybug thing.
Well, my mom's a big gardener, and we all like to garden as well.
That would be a yes. Okay. So let me explain why that's so important. When the spirit gives us a message of an explanatory or advisory nature, and your grandparents want you to get Chloe in for an eye exam, then they follow that up with, you know, she's, I was interpreting it as tonal quality, that maybe she liked music, but you said, oh, she's like a high frequency. But then when they follow that up with an objectively verifiable fact, which is gardening, the verifiable fact of gardening is how the spirits are letting you and I know that we've properly received and interpreted the message before that, which is get Chloe into the doctor. That's something that they do with me. And who's got the thyroid issue? They're talking about thyroid.
My wife was just mentioning that.
Yeah. Okay. Hmm. They want to talk about her now. Does she have a peanut allergy? What's with her and peanuts?
She doesn't like peanut butter.
Aha, verifiable fact following the message.
Do that. Amazing.
So, let's get her in for a thyroid exam, because what they're telling me is if she deals with it now, it will cease to be a problem. Okay. So she got, and who's the Scorpio? Scorpio time frame runs roughly from October 20th through November 20th. So that could be somebody connected to you who's a Scorpio, or that could indicate a significant birth, death, anniversary, or event connected to you or somebody close to you in this world or the other side within Scorpio.
A good friend of mine is a Scorpio, Nick.
Okay. Has he come to you recently to confide in something of a very personal nature?
Well, his mom just died recently, and we were talking about that.
Yeah. You are a good friend. You are the one that he will talk to and confide in. And basically what they're telling me is do what you're doing. You see, you're not telling him you need to feel this way, you need to feel that way. You're just listening. And it may feel, they're telling you that there's times you feel like I need to be doing more, but they want you to know that you're doing a lot. Hold on. Do you know if Nick's mother died from something that took her down, like a click at a time, like
cancer? Yeah.
Yeah. Cancer. Okay. Draining. I should say cancer, but draining sensation. So now she's here, and is there someone connected to she or Nick with like an Evie or a Ellie, a name like with an Evie or an Ellie?
I don't know his sister's name. Maybe it's his sister.
I want to say like Evangeline or Evelyn. I'm getting something like that. Was Nick there when she passed?
No.
Stand by. It doesn't matter to her that he wasn't there. Is Nick all upset that he wasn't there?
No, but he hasn't revealed that, but I feel that emotionally as you say that.
Hold on. Who's got the little dog?
Who has a little dog? I don't know.
Nick doesn't have, or his mom didn't have like a little dog?
Ah. My mother-in-law has a little dog. Had a little dog? I think she had one.
Okay. All right. A little dog just popped in to say hi. I want to get back to Nick's mom because she's got a message for him through you. All right. It's okay. She's totally okay with him not having been there. It is eating him up quite a bit. And she's giving me the Pisces time frame. Now, Pisces runs roughly from February 20th to March 20th. So there could be births, anniversaries, or events connected to you or any of these folks within Pisces. Anything in Pisces?
Sorry, what is the Pisces time frame?
Roughly from February 20th to March 20th, give or take a day or so on either end.
And this is a specific Pisces person?
Or a birth, death, anniversary, or event within Pisces. Here's the thing. You're going to need to be close to Nick, not like necessarily in proximity. I think he's going to have a real hard time during Pisces. So what it is, the enormity of everything is going to hit him during that time frame. So his mother said, be close. And who's Dennis?
I only know one Dennis. He's not related to this.
It doesn't matter.
Dennis, he's a guy that I ride bikes with sometimes.
Okay. Can Dennis be reckless when you're riding bikes?
I don't think so.
Next time you're out, be on guard. And not of Dennis, but watch what you're doing. Okay.
When I'm cycling.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. This is fascinating. You're in good health, but they're talking about like a sense of fatigue recently. You having any issues with protein or iron?
No, I feel good. I had a really intense flu recently, which was like the most I've ever been in bed.
Yeah, there's your protein iron issue. So, you know, try to keep getting some proteins. And they're telling me that you're better with vegetable proteins than you are animal proteins.
Interesting.
Why do you say that?
I like meat.
Ah, well, they're telling you like beans and vegetable proteins.
I might disagree with them.
That's fine, but there may be a reason. There may be some type of vitamin or compound that you can get from beans that you can't necessarily get. That doesn't mean stop eating meat altogether. It means for right now. So,
okay.
And then I'll leave that with you.
Wow, that was kind of a whirlwind.
Well, then we got a lot of folks coming through, and they do tend to jump around a bit. Oh, last thing, what's with bananas and protein? Not protein, potassium.
Bananas and potassium.
This one's targeted for you. Are you craving any? Do you sweat? I mean, if you're biking and you're, you know, physical, potassium is what we sweat out. But they're giving you all these bananas, so there may be something with you and potassium. Unless, you know, you love or hate bananas. And most people like them. I mean, how do you not like bananas?
Yeah. Okay, so maybe it's like an electrolyte imbalance or something.
Yeah. Electrolyte balance. And I, you know what? The more I'm thinking about it, the electrolyte balance, iron is a mineral, as is potassium, magnesium, calcium. Those are electrolytes. And if you said you just got over a really bad flu recently, this may indicate that in the wake of that, your electrolytes may be off. So that may be what they're talking about. And I know it's like, you know, I eat meat too. Oh, okay. So I'm not one of these, like, you got to be vegetarian. But what they're telling you, Derek, is that for the time being, you need to be getting more of your protein through vegetable sources.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to do that experiment. Try it out.
You know what? Have some lentils. You know, lentils are great. In fact, do you like curry?
What's love curry.
Okay, you love curry. Well, they're telling you to eat curried lentils.
Okay.
You know what's fascinating about that? First off, they said lentils, and then they said curry, and you said you love curry. And I read an article about a year or so ago. And actually, it's been more than that. And India has the lowest incidence of Alzheimer's and dementia in the world, and scientists have linked it to curry. And curry is a combination of several spices, but it appears that that combination clears out blood vessels in your brain. In other words, it gets all the funk and gunk out of there. And that's why India has a very low incidence of Alzheimer's and dementia, because of the curries keeping people's brains working. So there you go.
Cool. Amazing. Yeah. This is super cool. I actually have never had a medium. Have I never had a medium reading? I never experienced anything exactly like that. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, normally when I do a reading, I start with a 15-minute pre-explanation and I go through certain things and I talk about the no-no-no syndrome because a lot of people are like no-no-no, or they overthink things, which is another form of no-no-no. And recently I was doing a reading for a woman and her daughter spirit came through and I said, "Your daughter is talking about the box of buttons." No, that doesn't make any sense. I don't know why she'd bring that up. That makes I can't figure out why she even mentioned that because, you know, I collect buttons. I said, "Well, hold on, let's back up a bit. You collect buttons?" The answer is yes. Yeah, but why would she? Stop with arguments, okay? What it is, when a spirit comes in, they're building a rapport with me, and they may bring up little things at first. And you see how they did the verifiable fact on a message? We got two of them in a row, like with your wife and then peanuts. So she loves peanut butter or she dislikes or whatever it was.
Yeah, it doesn't like it. Yeah.
Doesn't like it. Okay, that's the verifiable fact because dislikes are just as important as likes because we can be defined and described by what we don't like just as easily as by what we do like. So when the spirit came in and said, you know, let's get your wife to get her thyroid checked, that's the advice and explanation. Then to verify it, peanuts, peanut butter, she doesn't like it. That's a verifiable fact, letting us know that we've properly received and interpreted the message before that. So, and what I really liked about that particular message is that whatever's going on with her, it looks like it's going to be a pretty easy fix, okay, provided she gets it taken care of now. So when people say, "Well, you're not a doctor," it's like, "No, I am not. But here's how I look at it. Spirits transmit information to me, and I transmit it to you. If my interpretation is incorrect, well, then you went to the doctor. But if my interpretation is correct, it very well may save your life." And I have hundreds of people who have verified that things have come through about their health status or something else that they listen to and they're very happy for. And then sadly, I have other people say, "I really wish I would have listened to that message." And also, let's get Chloe into the eye doctor. That looks like, you know, maybe she needs glasses or it could be something else, you know, but
Interesting.
that doesn't look like she's not going blind, but let's just get her in.
Thank you for that. It's really this whole resistance or the overthinking or the no, is in people like me, trained scientists, people that are very left-brained, who have relied on their rational mind to get through life. I feel like this is a big hurdle to overcome
Yes.
to fully experience this. You have that type of background. You have, the legal scientific training. So how
Wasn't
did you
he?
overcome that?
I remember when I was in England, one of the tutors said, "Mock, kindly stop cross-examining every spirit, would you?" Because something would come in and go, "Well, it's this." And it was that. And I go, "But it could be this, but maybe it's not." And what it is, we have to get that left brain out of the way and you go with what you feel. Feel first, think later. So get all the information down, what it means to you right away. Then after the reading, that's when you analyze it. Because when people hyperanalyze, it's no. They start to torpedo the message. Okay. Like I was doing a reading, this poor young lady. I was in New York City and her uncle came through and I said, "I'm feeling two areas in my heart that hurt really bad." And she says, "No, he didn't have a heart attack. He got shot twice in the chest." And you know, I shouldn't have said this, but I go, "I'm pretty sure that hurts," you know. And what it was, she was overthinking things, and then she realized that that was it. And then there's some people that they get very flustered. I mean, I was on a TV show, and TV shows, it's 7 minutes segment, 4 minutes of commercial, and then 7 minutes of the show. And this woman was there with her husband, older woman, and the host of the show said, "Mark, would you do readings for the audience?" And, you know, I'm used to being on camera. I'm used to being in front of people and lights, camera and all that. And I have to admit, no matter how many times you've done it, you still get nervous. Well, this poor lady was terrified, and she stands up, and her son spirit comes through. And I said, there's a younger male, feels like he could be a son. She goes, yeah, my son died. I said, he's giving me the name or the word cross. I'm seeing the image of a cross, red cross, Greek cross. I'm getting cross, cross, cross. No, no. I go, are you sure this is really strong? No. And the host says, well, we're coming up on a commercial break. So now we're waiting. There's 4 minutes. They're playing commercials. And the woman's standing there, and her husband says, he raises his hand. We're on the commercial break. He goes, well, our last name is Cross. I said, you mean like your son's name? And the host of the show, I could see her going, oh, my God. So we come back on. And the host goes, well, before the break, Mark kept getting cross, and they weren't taking it, but on the break, they realized that their last name is Cross, just like their son's spirit who came through. Mark, why don't you go to somebody else? it's like, thank you. Now, in defense of that lady, she's probably never spoken to a room full of people in her life, let alone being on a big TV show. Mm-hmm. There was a live audience. There was, you know, like five different cameras set up, lights, you know, everything. The poor thing, she was terrified. And she was so scared, she couldn't even recognize her own last name. And so that sometimes is very challenging for the medium when we're doing readings for someone. Also, like what you were saying, Derek, a lot of the things that came through may not make sense now, but they very well may later on. One of my favorite examples, I was doing a reading for this woman, and her mother's spirit came through and started bringing up an issue with her nephew. And she goes, yeah, I'm very close to my 7-year-old nephew. And I said, you need to get him to the doctor. And she said, okay. And I said, and I'm hearing the Little Richard song, Tutti Frutti, Rudy Tutti. And I'm singing Tutti Frutti. She goes, okay, well, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. She goes, I know who Little Richard was, but not a fan, and, you know, whatever. I said, look, just write it down. And if, you know, a couple weeks later, I get an email. She said, Mark, you're not going to believe this, but I called my sister and said, we need to get your son into the doctor. And she said, yeah, he's been complaining of this issue. So she made an appointment, and all three of us, my sister, me, and my nephew, my 7-year-old nephew, and the second we walk into the doctor's office, on the radio starts playing Tutti Frutti, Aw Rudy by Little Richard. Now, electromagnetic soul theory. Spirits are electromagnetic energy. On the subatomic EM level, time, according to Einstein's theory of relativity, and to all the way through Stephen Hawking, Max Tegmark, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Michio Kaku, okay, all the way up to the quantum physicists of the day, time doesn't exist. Ergo, spirits can see what we call future events. Radio waves are part of the electromagnetic spectrum. So this is what was going on. The EMS, the electromagnetic soul of her mother's spirit, is saying, hey, get my grandson to the doctor. And to verify that you're doing the right thing, I can tell what song is going to be playing the second you walk into that office. And there you have how the electromagnetic soul is able to help explain or expand our understanding of what I call interdimensional communication between us and spirits.
Mm. And you're also speaking to the importance of getting verifiable feedback. You know, when we play around with remote viewing, it's great to, like, you open the envelope and you see that, oh, I was 85% correct about the image inside the envelope, or you can go and look at the location once you view it. And it's, when you were training at that school in England, did you guys use feedback to help you?
Oh yeah. Without a doubt. And it was very rigorous training, and I don't want to say they didn't give me anything I already had, but it's like, you know, Michael Phelps, could probably swim pretty well until he had some coaching to show, no, some coaching, a lot of coaching to show him how to get the maximum efficiency out of his ability to swim. And building upon that, you know, I analyze what I do. I look at, you know, certain patterns, and then I keep seeing ratification of the electromagnetic soul of how things apply. People always talk about electrical fields being disrupted, and they start thinking about a loved one in spirit. Or, in fact, my mother's best friend, after my mom passed, and my mother's best friend, her name is Nancy, and she is a medium, and she said she received a phone call, and she looked at it, and it was my mother's phone number. That number had been disconnected. And she answered it, and she said there was... And she goes, I knew that was Jean. That was my mom's name. She goes, I knew it was Jean. See, because Nancy recognized, accepted, felt, and trusted. If we have a few minutes, I'd like to explain the RAFT technique, because you asked earlier, how can people be more sensitive to the presence of spirits and intuitive messages?
Yeah.
Well, I was trying to figure out how to explain this. And for my book, I'm working on the afterlife frequency. And Derek, I kept hitting a brick wall, and I had that dreaded writer's block. And writer's block always seems to happen on the day that I scheduled just to work on the book. and I couldn't, nada. So I said, all right, fine. I'm going for a walk on the beach. So I'm heading down my driveway because I live near the beach. And all of a sudden I get cold chills and tingles. Now I knew that's electromagnetic energy. And I live in Florida. It was like 90 degrees outside. So it's not because it was cold. And I immediately was directed in the opposite direction, away from the beach, but toward a bike path. Around 11 in the morning. So I'm walking down the bike path. I see these two objects shining in the light. So I walk up, it's a nickel and a penny. Well, I go to pick it up, you know, both my parents are in spirit, and I hear mom's voice in my head. If it's heads down, it's bad luck. And I start laughing because that's the Italian side of the family. They have like a superstition for all occasions. So I pick up this nickel and this penny because I hear dad go, it's money, grab it. All right, so I'm laughing because I can hear my parents do. And I'm looking at a nickel and a penny, and I go, oh, 6 cents. And they go, wait a second, 6 cents.
Oh,
all chills and tingles intensify. And in my mind's eye, I see my father standing in the ocean, the way he looked when he was about 40, when I was a little kid. And he was holding this blue canvas raft, and it had like these yellow rubber like ends to it. And I remember that raft. And I'm like, a raft. And then in unison, I hear my parents' voices. Mark, teach people to recognize signs from spirits. Accept the contact is real. Feel it without overthinking. Trust the message. And I go, R-A-F-T, raft. And so I ran back and took and I'm typing the whole thing, you know, and I'm getting it all down. And then I realized they walked me through what raft is. I was getting the cold chills and tingles, and I recognized a sign from a spirit. When I saw the coins and heard their voices, I accepted it as real. But it's a third step. And I'm bringing this up because you're a smart guy, okay? And a lot of my clients are smart people. And like, you know, I'm an attorney. It's feeling without overthinking. And this is where people go wrong. Oh, it's a coincidence. Grief-induced hallucination. I'm making it up. This can't be true. All right, this is where people, they see the beautiful message in the form of a sailboat on the ocean, and they just launched torpedoes at it. Boom. Overthinking it. Feel first, think later, and then trust the message. After the reading, analyze. Recognize, accept, feel, trust. And in the afterlife frequency, I explain that in greater detail, and I give exercises for people how to start developing the RAFT technique. And once you start doing it, then it's going to become second nature. It applies to spirits. It also applies to intuitive feelings. But I want to talk about trust, the fourth step. We live in a very chaotic world. And there's people who say that, oh, I received a message from God that I should fly this airplane into this building or blow up a school or shoot people. Those are not messages from the divine. Those are not messages from spirits. That is somebody's ego. Ego is created by the brain. The brain's different than the spirit. The ego edges God out, but the spirit is always giving us messages of love, healing, resolution, and protection. The ego is all about anger, bigotry, hatred, and violence. So when people, and I hate it when I hear on the news and they go, this terrorist spiritual advisor, no, he's not a spiritual advisor. He's a religious fanatic feeding this angry, ego-driven person things to lead to anger, bigotry, hatred, and violence. Mm-hmm. But true mm-hmm. messages from spirits, which are part of the collective consciousness, what some people would call the divine, would call God, are about peace, love, understanding, healing, resolution, protection. And that's how you know the difference. So people say, oh, I'm getting a message to go blow something up. Well, that's not a message from a spirit. And it's very important for people to understand that distinction. And so that's all part of the RAF technique.
Amazing. Yeah. And thanks, Mom and Dad, for making it so simple to get your writer's block.
I was so honored to have them as my parents. And I always got along really well with my mother and with my father. I mean, you know, like, you know, ups and downs. It was difficult, you know, when you have psychic parents and you're a teenager. Oh, that was brutal. You know, because teenage boys, we're always up to something. You're laughing because you know, we're always up to something. It doesn't necessarily mean something bad, but, you know, we're always trying to sneak around. And I couldn't get away with anything.
That's so funny. Mark, is there anything that we haven't covered yet that you want to make sure to explain to the audience or share?
Yeah. First off, I want to thank you, Derek, and I want to thank everybody for tuning into the show. If people would like to find out more about me, scheduling a reading, my work, I invite you to visit my website, which is afterlifefrequency.com. And that's the same as my book, The Afterlife Frequency, afterlifefrequency.com. And I invite you to sign up for my newsletter. I've got upcoming spirit communication events, both online and in person, coming up. And once you get on the newsletter, you can find out about that. And if you would consider, you'll see in my calendar of events, there'll be a graphic that says "Vote for Mark in the OMI Awards." And the night before Derek and I recorded this, I was notified by OM Times in conjunction with iSpirit Media that I've been nominated for two, what they call the OMI, O-M-M-I-E Awards, which are to acknowledge luminaries and specialists in the field of spirituality and holistic healing. I've been nominated as Best Medium, and also my book, The Afterlife Frequency, for Best Metaphysical Book. And I would request the honor of your vote, and it will explain to you on my site how to do that. And Derek, I really appreciate you offering me the opportunity to say this to everyone. I've often been asked if I have a message for the world. That's one of those dun-dun-dun. Mm.
That was my next question, actually. No, I'm just kidding.
And it's a long story, but I'll give you the short version of it. About 2 weeks after my mother died, I was very upset, and we were so very close, and I'd spiraled into depression, and I was driving back from court. And you got to realize I was a senior partner of a law firm, and all of a sudden wave of grief hit me. And everyone that's lost a loved one knows exactly what I'm talking about. You think you're doing fine, then all of a sudden that tsunami of grief hits you. And I pull over into this parking space at a convenience store of all places. And all of a sudden I see this flash, and I look to the passenger side, and there's my mom's silhouette in this beautiful silver white light. And she said, "Mark, you've been given the gift of mediumship so that you would not be crushed by grief, but now you must help those who are suffering with theirs." Now I'm breaking out into a sweat, Derek. I'm like soaking wet. And before I could respond, she said, "Your mission is to help people understand that the divine power you call God exists, that the afterlife, heaven, nirvana, whatever you wish to call it, exists, that your souls are immortal living spirits, that you can communicate with souls, and that you will be reunited with us when it is your time to leave the material world. And Derek, I'm sitting there literally soaking wet from sweat. And all I could say is, okay, trying to let it all sink in. And it was at that moment that everything in my life changed. And that's what I've dedicated my life to doing, is helping people understand that God exists, heaven, the afterlife exists, our souls are immortal living beings, we can communicate with souls, and we will be reunited with our loved ones in the light that we call God. And for me, that was not only life-changing, but the most comforting message I have ever received.
Well, first, thank you for the work that you're doing. I know you've helped a lot of people. And I'm also curious, how long did it take before you, because you're not practicing law anymore, you're doing full-time mediumship, it sounds like. How long did that take you to sort of shift the other circumstances of your life?
I'm laughing because right after that happened, everything changed. It's not like the door gradually opened. No, it was like I got flung through it. And the funny thing is, right after that, I was offered a job at a government agency, which enabled me to leave my law firm. And then I received a message from my literary agent that, and I knew that I needed to start writing my first book, Never Letting Go. And then I went to England. And when I was in England, the tutors said to me the day I was leaving, they go, "You're going on the world stage." And I'm like, "What?" So I get back to Florida, and all of a sudden I get a message. I'm not even in my office an hour that my first book, a publisher picked up the contract. It's coming out. And so then I brought on my manager, Rocky, and I took like a week off because she got me on MSNBC in New York City at a speaking gig there. And then she got me to speak at Harvard. And so I'm at Harvard and I receive a call from the elected official, my boss. He said, "I'm catching too much flack from the Republican Party that I have a psychic on staff." And I said, "Well, these are my spiritual beliefs. And last time I checked, I do have a right to freedom of belief." And he said, "You're taking too much time off." I said, "Well, this is my vacation time that I'm taking." And all of a sudden, I got one of those intuitive messages. And I said, "But I'll make it easy for you. I quit." He goes, "Okay." And I hung up the phone. And then I looked at Rocky and I says, "Oh my God, I just left the legal profession." And she said, "Mark, look around you. Where are you?" I'm looking around. I go, "Harvard." She goes, "What are you doing in an hour?" I said, "Giving a talk on the afterlife and signing copies of my new book, Never Letting Go." She said, "Don't you think you're exactly where you're supposed to be?" And you know, Derek, I've never looked back.
Amazing. I wish everyone to have such an easy falling things, circumstances supporting them to live their own destiny. But the lesson there is you're good at listening and trusting and not overanalyzing. So
that's it. It's recognize, accept, feel, and trust. You'll know when you're on the right path. And the right path is always peace, love, healing, understanding, compassion, resolution, protection. It's never about anger, bigotry, hatred, and violence. It never is. That's never. What did Gandhi say? There is no path to peace. Peace is the path.
Excellent. That's a great place to end on. Mark, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you, Derek.